Oh, the poppers are fading. You remind me to. There's a poem. I feel like I dreamed this novel while you're writing it, because I wrote a dream poem that was based on a dream where I was like, there are these gay men who had this experimental drug that made your butt really loose and made you hyper-focused. And the whole dream, I was like, where is this drug? I need to find the keepers of the experimental drug. So I'll show you that later. I'm gonna just read a little bit of poetry and then screen a film. So I'll just get started. I had another reading that I was going to do, but last minute decided to read another excerpt from the conclusion of my book, Carceral Capitalism, which is coming out in January, and I think it's available to pre-order. But this is from The Prison Abolitionist Imagination. One, a dozen roses versus the police state. In From Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation, Kianga Yamata Taylor writes, quote, "In the hours after Mike Brown's body was finally moved, residents erected a makeshift memorial of teddy bears and memorabilia on the spot where police had left his body. When the police arrived with a canine unit, one officer let a dog urinate on the memorial. Later, when Brown's mother, Leslie McSpadden, laid out rose petals in the form of his initials, a police cruiser whizzed by, crushing the memorial and scattering the flowers. The next evening, McSpadden and other friends and family went back to the memorial site and laid down a dozen roses. Again, a police cruiser came through and destroyed the flowers. Later that night, the uprising began." End quote. I think about how the people gathered after Mike Brown was killed, how they made a makeshift memorial on the blood-stained spot in the road where he had been murdered by the police state. What do I see in this encounter? The will of the people butting up against the police's desire to destroy, to crush all public expressions of grief. The police's show of force is unnecessary, compensatory. They want us to believe that the police cars will always crush rose petals. They tell themselves that their uniform and the power that backs it makes them invulnerable. Not like the rose petals arranged in the shape of MB. Erase the memorials, erase the flowers. The people will still rise up. That night, an uprising bloomed out of the ground where the memorial flowers had been crushed. I once read an article about the dreams of dying people. There was a former cop who couldn't stop having nightmares about the people he had violated. He told a hospice nurse that on the job he had done bad stuff. Tormented by his dreams, he gets stabbed, shot, or can't breathe. Eric Garner's last I Can't Breathe circles in time to haunt the officers who take the air out of the world. The cop died with so much regret. The conscious mind of the police officer may be sure of its correctness, but the unconscious mind knows it has done terrible things. The trampling of the memorial flowers is an act of repression. But whatever you try to blot out and refuse to integrate returns with greater vigor. If I ever met the officers, I would tell them, before you die, you will encounter the lives you took and violated. You driving around in your steel-enclosed fantasy of invincibility, you who must desecrate memorials to prove to yourself you are strong. To hide this weakness of imagination, a police cruiser scattering rose petals. What was it you tried to crush there? Was it a way to blot out awareness of your own death? Two, entombed flowers. In 1917, the revolutionary Rosa Luxemburg wrote to her comrade Sophie Leibnick from prison, quote, "Yesterday I lay awake for a long time. I dream to myself about various things in the dark. How odd it is that I'm constantly in a joyful state of exaltation without any particular reason. I lie there quietly, alone, wrapped in these many layered black veils of darkness, boredom, lack of freedom, and winter. And at the same time, my heart is racing with an incomprehensible, unfamiliar inner joy, as though I were walking across a flowering meadow in radiant sunshine. And all the while, I'm searching within myself for some reason for this joy. I find nothing and must smile to myself again and laugh at myself. I believe that the secret is nothing other than life itself. End quote. In the dark of the night, you traveled to a colorful meadow and with your powerful imagination, wove that meadow into a cloak of stars that you imparted to your comrade Sophie to wear as a shield against everything terrible. What bloomed in your mind that night as you lay quietly listening to the boots of the sentries crush the sand? You are sharpening your perceptive faculties so you could tune into the exalted frequency. You were sensitized by your cell, by the boredom weighing you down, until the pressure of the darkness gave way to an understanding of the deepest mysteries of what it means to be alive, of the connection between desire and politics. I think of your fate, of George Jackson's fate, of Fred Hampton's fate. The state must know when the universe gives birth to a true revolutionary. It must see in them a light it must extinguish, lest their spark find and set alight the divine spark in us all, which would spread until the world as we know it has been upended. Alone in your cell, your body became pure nerve. You were perceiving everything. It made you giddy, the inner joy you felt against the bleak backdrop of the prison. I imagine how you passed the time there, studying political economy and botany, writing letters to your comrades, assembling your herbaria, preparing for the revolution, getting lost in the flowers of your imagination. You were the secret. You were the principle of life itself. You were a tree they had to cut down. 3, planting the dream. In Freedom Dreams, the Black Radical Imagination, Robin D.G. Kelly writes, quote, "What shall we build on the ashes of a nightmare?" I won't propose much more, since the design and realization of such a space ought to be the product of a collective imagination, shaped and reshaped by the very process of turning rubble and memory into the seeds of a new society. End quote. I see our shadow in the trees, watching the wheel unfold. I see our one shadow on the wall. I see your restless hand in the spider's thread. I am the ice cave, and there is water, deep blue and white, a light at the bottom. I am equal to my love for you. Let down your hair, willow in the moonlight. The river lulls us into the dream. Nightmares jostle branches in our eyes. I long for the world that is before you, the plate you set on the slate of tomorrow. Your fingers flutter to feel for the grass between the valley where one foot follows the other into the flaming creek. We don't know what name to give the throbbing stone perched atop the hill. From here, I see for you. Look at what I lost when you were lost, and I can only hear the call of the stones. A body returned floats down the river dressed in candles. I send you the secret while you are asleep, the nights you carried in the length of a strand of hair, the unforgiving flash of his teeth. I stroke your cheek to unlock your jaw and release the rose you carry in your mouth. Your tongue is raw and your mouth is filling with blood. Dear, dear, forgive us for having fallen so far from where you planted the seed, at the bottom of the sea, waiting for the body to ride the stream back to where the rubble gave birth to the first dream. The egg cracks. Night wanders seaward, barefoot in her evening slip, and by this sadness you are shown the path to the holding sea, a trail burned by a herd of somnambulant turtles who folded one by one in their grief until a single remained to carry the breath of time back to the seed. Okay, so this film you're about to see, so I guess this one started out, you know, A Dozen Roses versus the Police State, and this film, I guess, is one lonely woman's desire versus the police state. So, content warning, it has pornographic footage, dildo porn in this film. The idea for this little essay film basically came from a news story that I read about this woman, Kara Lee, in her 50s, who, you know, one night she was lonely and hungry and went to Joe's Crab Shack and realized that she didn't have her wallet, but she was super drunk, and she was escorted home by a police officer. But when she was, you know, in her apartment, she got super freaked out by the fact that the police officer was there in her apartment with her. And so she was looking through her drawer and all she had was like socks and a dildo, and just like started beating the cop with the dildo. So yeah, this film is about, it's about that. I was just collaging text from these news stories that I read because they had really bizarre particular details, like about the fact that she wanted to own an ice cream shop and she had this dog. And so I just included some of these details about this woman who's, you know, one of my heroes, because I like lonely autoerotic women. So I'll leave it at that.